We'll be discussing this morning Canto 3, Chapter 28, Texts 3, 4, and 5. And it's from one of the longest sections of a story or verses in relation to the same personality within the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. There's several, but this is many, many chapters long. So it's a little appreciation of the subject matter first, like the broader picture. It's a discussion between Kapila Dev and Devahuti. Kapila Dev is an in Godhead. He appeared in Satya Yuga. And so at the very early stages of Satya Yuga, in fact, and he's the one of his avatar categories is he's Yuga Avatar. Yuga Avatar means one who delivers the process for achieving perfection within that age. Each of their four yugas, so there are four categories of Yuga Avatars. He's one. White in color. You know that Shakta, Rakta, Tita, Pita. Shukla, excuse me. Rakta, Tita, Pita. Verse from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. When the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram, where Gargamuni is giving the identity of Krishna in an indirect fashion, saying in previous ages he appeared in these different colors. Shukla is white, Rakta is red, Tathapita is Lord Chaitanya, yellow or golden color. So, whitish in color, and the son of Kardamuni and Devahuti. So that means Kardamuni and Devahuti, like Nanda and Jasoda, or you know, the parents of the personality of Godhead. This is a lila, and it means they have that parental affection towards him. And as is the format for the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the format of question-answer. It helps Krishna Katha. We hear it's important to hear Krishna Katha. So if you want to hear Krishna Katha, be good at asking questions. Be inquisitive. Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. Be inquisitive for the Shreya Uttama, the ultimate benefit. So Devahuti has that inquisitiveness. That's how the whole section, well, it goes back much earlier, you know, the marriage of Devahuti to Kardamuni, and before the marriage of Devahuti, Kardamuni becomes, you know, perfectly realized. Lord Vishnu comes before him. It's like a long narration. And informs him, I'm going to appear as your son, because I know your heart, that's your heart's desire. And I will fulfill that desire. And your wife is gonna show up here in 2 days, in the middle of the forest. And so there's this whole narration. And then the marriage of the two, and then Swayambhuva Manu returns back to the palace. And following his new son-in-law, he becomes much more inclined towards what you're going to hear Kapila Dev describe. The process for Satya Yuga, because he was ruling as king, but then this stage of detachment can also follow. You know, in detachment that comes from engaging everything in Krishna's service, and then this other kind of detachment is moving from that position of engaging things to the Ashtanga Yoga that's, or the Dhyana, Dhyayate, the process for Satya Yoga. So, after Kardama Muni leaves, after nine daughters are born, after you have thousands of years of austerities together with Devahuti, she wants children. Arrangements are made for children. And when Kapila Dev becomes mature, Kardama Muni leaves home. So that's where chapter 25, this is, so I'm giving you like an overview, I'm trying, because this is 28. So 25 begins with Devahuti asking a question. And it's a good question. And the question, the answer to the question spans over several chapters. It's such a good question. So I'm such a good question, I'm going to read the question. Nine daughters were born first. Lord Brahma, who is the father of Swayambhuva Manu, who is her father, and Lord Brahma, who is the father of Kardama Muni, who is her husband, Lord Brahma came. When she was pregnant with Kapila Dev, and he made several pronouncements. He said these nine daughters can be married to the different sages so they can assist in the producing of good praja. And Devahuti within your womb is the personality of Godhead, and he will deliver you. So she already knew that when Kardama Muni left, the person who is her son is the personality of Godhead. She wasn't confused. She wasn't like, maybe. She was very clear. And so she approached her son, knowing that he's the personality of Godhead, to ask him the following question. I'm very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, O my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Sound familiar? Your Lordship, this is her son, is my only meaning out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye, which by your mercy alone I have attained after many, many births. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and the Supreme Lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of the ignorance of this universe. Now, be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feelings of false ego. Anybody know about false ego? Our dear friend? Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You are the axe by which one can cut the tree of material existence. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you, who are the greatest of all transcendentalists, and I inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. She's portraying herself as an attached householder with bodily identification and confused about her duty and in ways similar to Arjuna's position. So this is chapter 25, and in chapter 25 it's called The Glories of Devotional Service. So the first step of this exchange between Kapila Dev and Devahuti is he describes the glory of devotional service. Devotional service is the axe that can cut the tree of material existence, and the way that devotional service can begin and be matured and be executed or prosecuted or carried out is through association of devotees. And so the glories of what association of devotees is, how to recognize a devotee, how to associate with the devotee, the result of that association with the devotee, the devotional service that follows all of that, pure devotional service is chapter 25. And then, just to keep it simple, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in his commentary at the beginning of chapter 28, as he says, chapter 26 and 27, kind of like stepping back from pure devotional service, describing mixed devotional service. Mixed devotional service, specifically, Sankhya mixed with bhakti. I don't know if you've ever wondered, but I wondered a whole lot, many, many times. How does this work? He's an incarnation of the personality of God, and he's presenting Sankhya, and the process for the age is meditation, but where's bhakti in this picture? Meditation and bhakti, kind of like, in my mind, they're, okay, that's over there, and this is over here, and something else over there, kind of like three buckets. It's like Bhagavad Gita. There's Sankhya sections in Bhagavad Gita, but the whole message of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti. It's the basis and support. In fact, the very language in Kapiladeva's teaching is supported by bhakti. So Sankhya standing alone, impersonalist like Sankhya. Mechanistic scientists, they like Sankhya. Atheistic mechanistic scientists, they like, you know, the push and pull of matter, making this, wiggle this and it wiggles that over there. Adjust something here and then something else over there happens. So the cause and effect of material nature. Atheistic Sankhya is popular. But this is not atheistic, this is theistic, and theistic means God-centered, means after that long, difficult to read for many of us, chapter on, you know, the unfolding of the elements, this causes that, causes that, causes that. At the very end, it's all of this is to be supported by bhakti. And the purpose of that knowledge is Sankhya. It's, here's the categories of matter, and here's how the puzzle parts fit together. We're over here with the category of spirit. We belong to the category of spirit, and extrication from matter is by meditation on supersoul. Ta-da. And then, again, 27 carries that further, how that bhakti with the detachment from matter based on Sankhya can further progress and mature and develop. So, in short, real short, Sankhya mixed with bhakti. Emphasis, the bhakti emphasis is what the mind does, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. And in that whole chapter, 27, after hearing that, you know, moving from simply Sankhya stating meditation upon the Supreme Lord, he explains how to do it. There's very valuable instructions for householders specifically about performance of duties as in the position of a householder. You know, with about money and possessions and stuff and male, female, because that was her part within her question, going back to chapter 25 beginning. So very nice instructions. And then Devahuti says, time out, wait a minute. How does this work? Because the soul is inextricably involved with matter, and matter is inextricably involved with the soul. And even if you get detachment through knowledge, the tendency to have affinity for matter is still there. The cause is still there. And so even if you get detached for a bit, then you find yourself getting attached again. Sound familiar? So what to do? Help! Is it possible? Maybe you've wondered that question too. Is it possible to actually... So then the chapter 27 concludes. He's saying, yes, it's possible. So we should be convinced. Yes, it's possible. And the principle is bhakti. And then there's levels of bhakti, as there are levels of faith. As I was speaking on this section, making a plan, preparing for the Gitanagari retreat coming up in the end of May, at least you know what the topics and how I would want to, at least in a directional sense, handle the topics. And the broad topic is the role of faith in the unfolding of bhakti, which is exactly what is the subject matter here, so I'm making reference to it. And there are different levels of faith. And according to different levels of faith, one of the examples in scripture is Kanishtha Madhyama and Uttama, Adhikar. And what does the word Adhikar mean? Don't look at your paper. What does Adhikar mean? Not sure. Okay. But now after today you'll know. It means qualification. Qualification. Like the Adhikar, the qualification needed to worship the deity on the altar is you must be second initiated. So that's a preliminary qualification required for deity worship. In the temple. In your home you can worship your deity, but in the temple, Brahminically initiated. So what's a qualification? There's a qualification for karma. So in addition to these Madhyama, it's Kanishtha Madhyama Uttama. Here's another. This is Rupa Goswami from Bhakti Sandarbha. There's a qualification for engaging in karma yoga, and that's you're attached to the fruits of your work, but some faith in God, so you can do karma yoga. And qualification, that's like detachment. I've had it. Frustration. And that's a qualification for gyan yoga. And then there's a third, where one is neither too attached nor too detached. It's a qualification for bhakti. When such a person hears and receives the association of someone who's carrying bhakti, they can receive bhakti. They'll say yes instead of no, or maybe, or see you later. They'll say yes. It's a qualification. And that's a kind of faith. Through that association of a devotee, one develops faith that through the process of bhakti, I can become extricated from the entanglement of material existence. Completely. like Devahuti asked in 25 and 27, she's saying, is it possible? And emphatically, it's possible. One has to have proper faith that this adhikar means qualification. Not too much attached, not too much detached. And now I repose my faith in this process of bhakti, so I can regard things of this world, you know, the mine, stuff, you know, the resources of material nature, you know, however you want to think of it, detached, but not like an impersonalist detached, detached enough to engage in prescribed duties, but not with a sense of proprietorship and enjoying the senses with those objects, but in service to Krishna, like going to school, or like family life, or whatever, going and conducting a program at the university. It's not like I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. We do some service. And so you can move about in the field of life, material creation, not too much attached, not too much detached, with faith in the principle of bhakti. And then that faith in the principle of bhakti also has levels. There's a wonderful purport in which it's explained, not exactly as I'm explaining it, but in a directional sense, where Prabhupada is speaking of mixed bhakti and then pure bhakti. And pure bhakti requires pure faith, which means there's only one thing. And there isn't a second thing, and that one thing is pleasing Krishna. Now go way back down to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Four types of men engage in my devotional service. I want, or I want, or I want, or I want. And that's mixed. I want. And the unmixed is, I don't. But it's not, you know, it doesn't become an impersonalist. One becomes just, it says, Braja Bhakti. It's right in this chapter 27. That's where faith is being moved towards, even, you know, whatever position we're in. And one may be, according to Rupa Goswami's teaching, same as here, I may not be there, I may not be at Braja Prem stage, but I have faith, and as I move about in this world, that faith, conducting my duties properly and this detached, not too much attached, faith in Krishna position, by intensive, regular, strong activities of hearing and chanting, that faith will grow. I'll get this wow experience. I'll feel connected to Krishna more. And with that, this not too much attached, not too detached position becomes fixed. So I don't become agitated by, you know, either end of the pendulum swing, too much attached, too much detached, and just carry forward with the unfolding of bhakti. And then that person becomes an agent, naturally so, for giving bhakti to others, because they're the bearer of bhakti. So others benefit by that person's presence and that person's association. And progressively, because of that faith, they just carry on and carry on and carry on and carry on, and without, so the details are there in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. One can come to the stage of just exclusively being interested in Krishna's service. Externally carrying out duties, like a sadhaka might. Internally being absorbed in the mood of serving Krishna in intimate ways, as the residents of Vrindavan do. Now that's Rupa Goswami's teachings. Now here, back to Kapila Dev's teaching, Prabhupada inserts that in one of the purports, but it's a very essential part of the Sankhya mixed with Bhakti is where the mind goes. If the mind is involved with the sankalpa or the aspiration, the expectation of enjoyment, we're mixed. So one has to come to that unmixed position. But it's like using the thorn to remove the thorn. One can be engaged in prescribed duties. This is the role of Daivi Varnashram, with Krishna as the recipient of this offering of service in Daivi Varnashram according to one's psychophysical nature. And within that frame, cultivating one's faith in bhakti, one's relationship with Krishna. And as that, again, as that faith grows and the strength of reposing one's faith in the principle of one's relationship with Krishna is my all and all. The other things are just part of that offering. Then gradually, it's described, the modes of nature subside. And it's clear, it's presented in a very clear manner. The modes of nature create, when mixing with false ego in the process of creation, then the elements of the mind, material intelligence, material senses, material objects, and then we get a body, and then we become attached to the bodily conception and enjoying in terms of the body. It's the modes of nature. And the modes of nature, he teaches, Devahuti. You asked, is it possible? The modes of nature subside their action upon the mind if the mind becomes fixed upon the Supreme. And then the conditioning is over. Even you're within material nature that has modes. If your mind is fixed upon the Supreme. So our process is Maha Mantra, or the chanting of the holy name. And this process, a tative one, so that then it moves into chapter 28. Ashtanga Yoga mixed with Bhakti. So now I'm going to read the first verse of chapter 28, and we'll discuss verses 3, 4, and 5. So first verse, this is the opening sentence of, or statement of the chapter, moving into this next section, Bhakti mixed with Ashtanga. My dear mother, O daughter of the king, I shall now explain to you the system of yoga, the object of which is to concentrate the mind. By practicing this system, one can become joyful and progressively advance towards the path of the Absolute Truth, Ashtanga mixed with Bhakti. Towards Shuddha Bhakti. So there's a certain faith of people that do this Ashtanga Yoga mixed with Bhakti. And according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary, verses 2 through 4 cover the first two parts of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta means Ashta? Eight. Janmashtami. Ashta. The eighth day of the moon. Ashta. So, the Ashtanga Yoga is the yoga of eight angas. And the first two angas, or limbs, are Yama and Niyama. Basically the do's and the don'ts. And it's not only Ashtanga Yoga, really, briefly and indirectly yesterday at the university. Supposing I want to take martial arts. a proper martial arts teacher will first teach yamas and niyamas, you know, codes that you should live your life by, and prohibitions. You never use this martial art to go chop people or be a macho or, you know, do hurtful things. Never. And if you're not, if you can't, you don't have character, you shouldn't take the martial arts class, because you become, you know, you'll have something powerful and danger in the hands of a person without character. It's like technology. Something very powerful in the hands of people that don't have character. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. And sure enough, it's corroding the quality of life real fast. Technology in the hands of people that don't have character. It's Kali Yuga. So first comes character. And, you know, deeply establishing yama and niyama. So that's 2 through 4, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In fact, he points to which items in those 3 verses are the yamas and which one are the niyamas, you know, injunctions and prohibitions. And that they're mixed. He doesn't, you know, this bucket over here is the, and then over there. He just presents them, yamas and niyamas. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear some yamas and some niyamas that are found in other parts of the Bhagavatam and other parts of Bhagavad Gita. Not unfamiliar. But at least, you know, that's the instruction that's being given here. Text 2. One should execute his duties. The Sanskrit is swa dharmacharanam, dharmacharanam, prescribed duties. You know, you have a body and you have a mind. So it's not who you are, but you have a body and you have a mind. So you have prescribed duties according to your nature, the guna and karma of your body. You have a nature, and according to nature you have some duties, directed by scripture through the agency of a teacher or spiritual master. And one should avoid performing duties not allotted to him. Right? From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that. Also, one should be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord, and one should worship the lotus feet of the spiritual master. So, of course, Bhagavad Gita has extensively discussed the principle of nishkam karma, doing your work without attachment. And specifically, whatever comes of its natural accord. Like that question last night, you know, if I take care of my parents, then I'll have to earn a bunch of money, and to earn a bunch of money, I may have to be involved with dirty stuff, but I don't want to be involved with dirty stuff. So you can refer him to this, you know, with, be satisfied with what comes of its natural accord without deviating into, you know, compromised lifestyle or compromised whatever. Be principle-centered. This is the advice of, within the Ashtanga Yoga system. It applies to the type of bhakti that we perform, but this is now specific to the Ashtanga Yoga system. One should perform, now 3 and 4. One should cease performing conventional religious practices. Gramya Dharma. Gramya means like, well, the word is conventional. Gramya Kata is like village talk. Blah, 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 blah. So one should not do that. And gramya dharma. This is for the performance of Ashtanga Yoga and Satya Yoga connected with bhakti or based and supported by bhakti. It'll help bhakti grow if done properly. And should be attracted to those dharmas which will lead to salvation. So that the principle is anukojyasya sankalpa pratikojyasya varjanam. You're familiar with these two of six principles of surrender to Krishna. That which will enhance bhakti, you accept. That which will be disturbance for bhakti or detrimental to bhakti, you reject. Same. And again, this is yamas and niyamas. You know, it's this controlling the mind. What's the objective? Mind focused. One should eat very frugally. And should always remain secluded so that he can achieve the highest perfection of life. That's what Kardamuni did, and later that's what Swayambhuva Manu did, but he's now explaining this to Devahuti. He'll go to a secluded place. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. Yoga is part of that eightfold system. Again, the purpose is keeping the mind controlled. So it's not prescribed for us. We're not advised to perform Ashtanga Yoga. It's not Satya Yoga. But these principles, you know, live simply, and not in a complicated. If you want to cultivate bhakti, don't overly complicate your life. Keep things in a very simple manner. As far as possible. So this eating frugally, Prabhupada speaks, you know, specifically, he refers to a passage from Smriti where it says, you have a certain hunger, eat half. That's what Smriti says. The other half air, another quarter water, finished. Not gluttonous, but frugal in eating. Not too much, not too little. That's the middle ground. And for controlling the tongue. And then, ahimsa, satyam, asetyam, asteyam. One should practice nonviolence and truthfulness. One should avoid thieving and be satisfied with possessing as much as he needs for his maintenance. He should abstain from sex life, perform austerity, be clean, study the Vedas, worship the supreme form of the personality, Godhead. In reading this, I was immediately reminded of a verse in the sixth canto, chapter 1, where Shukadeva Goswami is describing the process of detachment from tendencies for sinful activities. And that's the verse that begins, tapasa macharjena samena namenava tyagena satya sochabhyam yamena niyamenava yama niyamas. Prabhupada calls it the regular principles of knowledge. The term regular principles meant something in Prabhupada's vocabulary. So regular principles of knowledge. These are yamas and niyamas for knowledge that leads to detachment. And in detachment, the mind can be peaceful and focus on what we should be focusing on instead of what we shouldn't be focusing upon. So these are just establishing some principles that we'll hear some more next couple of days about the further process of Ashtanga. But just as a reminder, bhakti is the basis. It's to help one come to the position. Kapila isn't just teaching, you know, become an Ashtanga yogi. It's leading to a pure devotional service. But there are principles. So the form is appropriate for Satya Yuga, not appropriate for Kali Yuga, but the principles are appropriate for all yugas. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you for this class. You very beautifully laid out this topic of inquiries and answers as a way of cultivating advancement in any path, Ashtanga Yoga or B. It's very interesting the quality of instructions that she's receiving from her son. It seems to me that there's a relationship between our, you could say, level of submission and the quality of instruction that we receive. Even you mentioned the famous verse, accepting all that is favorable for devotional service, rejecting all that is unfavorable. So I could see a context where perhaps the instructing guru, in this case Gurudev, would tell her to reject something or accept something based on what he can see she can accept or reject. So I was wondering if you could explain this a little bit, that perhaps if we're not receiving the highest sort of instruction, that it may be because we ourselves are not so surrendered, and so as a result of that we are cheating ourselves in a way, and the guru, seeing that we're not so surrendered, he may not give us that instruction because he knows we won't be able to handle it. So how do we go beyond that, you know?
Well, there are certain assumptions in your question. Some of are valid and some of them are not so valid. Something I'm going to be mentioning in Gita Nagari is instructions are, it's part of the duty of the instructor to understand the position of faith of the instructed and instruct accordingly. And different instructions may come for two different instructed persons according to their capacity, which is, you know, one point that you're making that's certainly valid. Instructions beyond the capacity, faith-wise, and then commensurate with faith, you know, the level of bhakti-wise, one may be instructed in such a way that the instruction isn't received, you know, the filters are up and one hears other things and then acts according to what one thinks is the instruction, but it's not what the instruction is. And then they do other things that then can, the consequence of which can be the sense of failure or the sense, or offense. Failure to carry out the instructions because I just didn't understand the instruction. I've got my filters up. And that which is appropriate for a certain stage, like Prabhupada gives, a certain stage is not appropriate for another stage. An example that Prabhupada gives is in the beginning of planting a tree or a shrub or something, one may put a fence around it because animals may come and eat the shrub or eat the plant or something. So, and then, but once the tree or the shrub is matured, the fence isn't needed anymore. So, cautions to be observed when instructing a very new person are different than cautions to be observed otherwise. So it really requires a qualified instructor, and from the instructed position, which is the basis of your question, it's not how do we go beyond it, it's how do we go beyond begins because we're not ready to receive those instructions. It's just that more something more appropriate instruction. When there's faith in bhakti, then there's application of the principles that one receives, which then grows bhakti. So take your question, give it another context. Supposing it's springtime, we're planting a garden. And some things that we're planting, say we're growing marigold flowers. Some of the marigold seeds, they sprout very quickly. Some are medium and some are really slow. That's fine. Not like the one that's growing really slow did something wrong. He's just growing to his capacity. So it's not like that the person that's growing slowly and therefore receiving instructions that are appropriate, that it's perfectly okay. It's not necessarily that something that they're doing wrong by the fact that they're growing slowly. There's such diversity. I was just having this discussion with Shivram Maharaj 3 days ago. There's such diversity. That's wonderful. So it's not like, you know, a premise that I feel is not so. It's misleading. Is it must be I'm doing something wrong. Or maybe if I was doing something better, I would get better instructions and be a better recipient for those instructions and so forth. There's always room for self-improvement, but it's not necessarily, I'm missing something. It just may be a stage of evolving, that's all. So the operative principle is sincerity. What do I want? Some people, they don't want Krishna. Some people want Nick. Some people want all kinds of wants. So we can look, you know, introspect and see with honesty, you know, what's the mix that's there? And to what degree sincerely do I want bhakti to grow? And thereby displace, diminish the influence of these other wants. That's where the attention should go. Not, what am I doing is that so that I could be getting better? You know, it's the internal application of the principle of sincerity, and those things that I have received, apply them with sincerity, with faith that bhakti kripa will grow and the other things will subside. They're influence-wise, like the modes of nature, propelling. There's a verse in the Uddhava Gita, 11th canto, chapter 20, that speaks of, I'm sure you've heard this from Jai Jagannath before, but one who has faith in bhakti through association, recognizing the futility of material involvement in matter and trying to find happiness in involvement in matter, but still is attracted. You know the verse? Yeah. So that person carries on performing the prescribed duties, recognizing that their implication in matter is going to bring them suffering, yet their principle continues to grow because of the strength of their hearing and chanting. So that's where attention should go. The principle of hearing and chanting done with faith, and that faith says it will carry me to beyond this worldly attraction. And then it's instructions that are appropriate as that faith grows. So that's where attention should go, not now, being lazy and complacent won't help one grow. Bhakti isn't a vending machine. It's not a mechanical process. I do my this and do my that and I'm going to go back to Godhead. It's not a vending machine. It's a devotional process. Bhakti needs to grow. Nurture that bhakti. That's what we need to be doing. So letting go of the mechanical approach and entering and accepting a devotional approach. through what, you know, all of what we do. Anything else? Yes. You go ahead. You had your hand up first.
Hare Krishna. I have a question about fixing the mind on Krishna.
Fixing the mind on Krishna?
Yeah. When chanting japa or just anything, is it helpful to focus on the aspect of the super soul within the heart, or is it better to just focus on Krishna in the spiritual world, beyond this world, beyond us?
Sure, makes sense. But here's what Harinam Chintamani says. She's conducting a class on Harinam Chintamani. So, where attention should go is to the sound. And within the sound, form is there. We discussed this a little bit last night. You know, the beginning with the Word, and the Word was God. So, God exists in sound. But we don't have access to His form. We have access to the sound. And within the sound, the form is there. So, when a chanter of the Holy Name absorbs themselves with attention in the sound, the form will appear in the mind. It's not that there's the form that appears in the mind and there's the sound. It's when the mind is absorbed in the sound, the form along with the sound will appear. Because the form is within the sound. So don't put the cart before the horse. Put the horse before the cart. Now it's, you know, our minds are restless, so they want to, you know, do something besides what we're doing. That's what a restless mind wants. So just do what you're doing. Just hear and chant the sound. That's the challenge. That's where attention should go, is to the sound. The form will come. In front of you? Yeah?
You mentioned about the question posed by...
I mentioned about what?
The question posed by Devahuti to Lord Kapiladev, the way she's...
At the beginning?
At the beginning.
Okay.
I was just trying to understand, despite being the kind of woman she was, being so devoted to her husband, what was the reason or the context in which she's feeling that way?
The context was... She had been married. You're married.
Single.
Not married, single. Okay. Those that are married know what it's like to be married. They have someone that they're living with. There was a time when they weren't married, and then they're married, and now they're living with somebody, and, you know, there's, you know, attachments grow. All kinds of things happen, you know, but attachments grow. So she's been married to a pure devotee for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, serving him faithfully, happily, lovingly, for tens of thousands of years. And now he's gone. He just left. So what's she feeling? She's feeling separation and deep attachment for her pure devotee husband, who she's been faithfully serving for tens of thousands of years. That's the context. So now she's looking to the feelings of misery and separation is due to affinity for matter. Identification with the body, identification with the mind, and like that. Okay. Something else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. I have two questions. One of them follows from what you were explaining to Prabhu.
Himanshu.
Himanshu Prabhu. In that verse, you had said that if the person is, even though he's attracted to something he knows is bad for him, like the attachments.
He knows he's going to bring misery, but he's attracted anyways.
He's attracted, but he knows it. So is it that because of his faith, he actually overcomes his attraction? He doesn't get pulled into the... Like, he's attracted, but he's putting a hand in front and saying, I'm not going to do this.
No. The verse speaks of, he goes ahead and does it.
Oh.
In a regulated manner, according to, you know, the regulations of Varna and Ashram, he does that. Rather than pretending to be what he's not, I'm not attached. He's attached. So he's regulating that through the Varna and Ashram system while recognizing it's not going to bring the happiness that I think, you know, through attachment is going to bring me. I'm not deluded like that. I'll go ahead. Instead, focus my attention, going ahead, focus my attention on bhakti. So you're growing the jewel inside this other framework. This Daivivanashram.
And the second question was, you had said at one point, be satisfied with what comes of its natural accord. I may not have been listening so properly, but could you please expand or explain how one can apply this and not, when you said it.
A bell went on. A bell rang?
Well, I was trying to like apply it, but at the same time I was thinking with this statement by itself, sometimes I may tend to think, you know, the thought where, oh, Krishna will take care.
Ke sara sara.
So how to not, or how to...
Okay. An application point. I'll give two or three examples of application points. A common one in the devotee world is somebody has a career and they've worked very diligently through so many, 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 many years and hours of developing their academic credential and their resume and their CV, and they, so now they're in the corporate world, and you know, should I continue with that, you know, thing, but, you know, growing and feeling that I'm growing and feel the satisfaction that I'm not stagnating, I'm continuing to unfold and grow and develop, and should I go there or should I go over there, and like just. You know, so the answer to that question should be according to the faith of the individual. So what may be appropriate for this person may not be appropriate for that person. But the application is, you know, in the broad sense, is to help the person come to the position where they're satisfied with comes of its own accord, without meaning specifically, without compromising that which nurtures bhakti. Because many of the decisions that people have to make in the corporate world is, well, if I take this upgrade, then there'll be more expectation of time, and that is going to pinch my sadhana. And I'm already feeling the ouch just contemplating saying yes to that upgrade. So then there's an application point. Be satisfied. Oh, just an application point. Somebody was really, 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 really skilled and really, really, really competent. And they got so high in the corporate structure they were involved in, they were getting dizzy. And, you know, so what to do? You know, well, maybe you can just say, no thanks, let me go down. But, you know, the answer was, in our corporate structure, you can't go down. You're out. So we went out. And, you know, took a income capacity that was much less so that he could, you know, that which comes of its own accord. What was propelling him before was ambition, and that ambition sense carried him and along with qualification to dizzying heights. But then, you know, he was away from home and neglecting so many things that he deeply valued. So he just like walked away from it. That's an application point. Here's another one, you know, for our younger set here. Supposing somebody has some exam, their student. I know a number of students that are in high school and college, and they obsess about how much time they have to spend, and they over-prepare, and they do lousy in the exam because they're too much attached. And study, 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 study. They're so wound up that when they sit down to take the exam, the mind goes blank. Multiple people have reported like that. So the advice to such a person would be, you do your Krishna conscious best and leave the result up to Krishna. Be satisfied with comes of its own accord. Krishna's the ability, not, you know, you're the ability. There's another application point. You have another one in mind? Is there a particular personal one, or, you know, somebody that you're dealing with? That
I was wondering how does making decisions come into work, because you can decide not to do something and you can decide to do something, but you can also decide not to decide.
And that's a decision too. That's a decision too. Well, deciding not to make a decision, you just made a decision. So?
One may get into this thinking that, you know, I'm deciding not to make the decision because things will just come off their own accord.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a possibility. I call that a pause. Left or right become more clear, because right now it's not so clear. So things will come of its own accord means there'll be an indication that left or right is the appropriate choice. And supposing you wait and it doesn't become clear, and other circumstances are forcing a decision. That happens sometimes. And then you make a decision. And in such a circumstance, you do a number of things. You look within, you look to those who are guiding you, you consult peers, and you move. And as you move, you may not be 100% absolutely clear this direction is the direction to go. So you take a step or two or three and you wait to see, is Krishna giving some indication this was the right direction to move in, or is Krishna giving some indication this is not the right direction to move in? And if Krishna gives the indication this wasn't the right direction to move in, you know, in because your spirit is not attached, your spirit is humble service, you take three steps back and then move along the other option, and you again look to see, is Krishna giving some indication? then it's not, you know, based on attachment. It's based on, ultimately all of this is for becoming attached to what Krishna wants. Not, you know, pass, fail, or win, lose. That's not what, you know, life is not about win, lose. Life is about becoming attached to Krishna and moving with what Krishna wants. So if there's not a clear indication, you may pause and then wait for the indication. But it's not exactly things will take their own course, because things will. You just stand still and things move, and things will take their own course. But now, what's our active part in pleasing Krishna? What's my role in pleasing Krishna? That's the relationship with Krishna question. And that's at the heart of a life of a devotee, is moving, enhancing, strengthening, enriching that relationship with Krishna. Krishna, what do you want? What will please you? The more that more that attention goes in that direction, one becomes more like your question, you know, more of a fit recipient for the instruction of what Krishna wants. Because Krishna can be hollering what he wants, and I don't hear it because, you know, different reasons. I'm attached to what I want, and it may not be what Krishna is hollering. Or I may have a different set of criteria of what's to be done, what's not to be done, or something like that. Anything else? Yes. Right here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Speak right into the microphone, yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yes.
As you were answering to Mataji, like to be continuing in the corporate, working in the corporate.
Speak right into the microphone, please. I heard what you said, now continue.
Yeah, Maharaj. So
in the corporate world, one has challenges. Then?
Yeah. You mentioned it depends on our faith, whether to continue working or dedicating ourselves to the devotional activities.
No. That's oversimplification of what I said. I was specifically speaking of people that are in a corporate position and they're being presented with, would you like to take on a new position and climb the corporate ladder? And some persons faced with that decision are in a dilemma. It was specific about an application point of being satisfied with comes of its own accord. And such a person needs to introspect and see what's important to me. It's been important to me to get to where I am, you know, back there, is to succeed. So now here's a success, looks like, success opportunity. Should I take it? What's important to me is success, continuing to succeed. But I don't want to just say it in a totally negative sense, because it may be part of one's nature. One needs to be honest about what one's nature is. Supposing I say, no, I want to keep my sadhana. You know, I don't want to compromise my sadhana. And then I said no. Then I regret, oh, lamenting and lamenting, 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 and endlessly lamenting. Should have taken that. And, you know, then even whatever sadhana one's doing is distracted sadhana instead of focused sadhana. So there's always, as we grow in Krishna consciousness, this need of being introspective and being properly guided and making decisions based on the reality of my situation. With faith, it grows more towards that which is going to directly enhance my devotion to Krishna. But it's not the impersonal sense or falgu vairagya. You just give something up and now you're detached and you're more spiritual. Not like that. What, something may be useful in Krishna's service in some way or another way. Okay. Last question.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. Maharaj, how do I understand seclusion, like from the context of today's class? Is it like not applicable in this age, or is it like seclusion in the association of devotees away from materialistic association?
Well, are you speaking about Ashtanga Yoga specifically?
I had heard multiple times like being secluded.
The secluded part specifically?
Yeah.
Well, you heard how I edited that. As living simply. Living simply. Because the whole of the Ashtanga process is not something that is effective for this age as it was for Satya Yuga.
Simplified. So living simply.
Yeah. Now, again, each of us have a different nature. Some people can't even imagine living in New York City. Some people that are living in New York City can't imagine living like you're living. Because for them, living in New York City means there's this ocean of opportunity of preaching. And they're immersed in the mood of preaching Krishna consciousness so much so that the complexity and noise and all of that stuff doesn't affect them at all. But then you'll go and see the space where they live, and is it cluttered or is it simple? That's like their heart. Is their heart cluttered or simple? What's that sacred space in which they live? Just as an example, how that particular point can be applied. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.